This hour we've been discussing chance and fate. These are subjects that obsess novelist Amy Tan. In her new memoir, The Opposite of Fate, she muses on the chance occurrences of her life. Amy Tan was on her way to China when Anne Strainchamps caught up with her to talk about fate and its opposite.
You know, I think kids growing up today in our largely secular Western culture must get the message that the main forces shaping their lives are nature and nurture and free will. I mean, we're very scientific about it. You know, you've got DNA, and then you've got your family issues, and then you've got the choices you make in your life. Did growing up in a Chinese family give you different ideas about the forces that shape our lives?
I had, I think, a much broader spectrum of things to choose from. For one thing, my mother believed in Chinese fate, which included something that was the equivalent of a divinity who decides for you certain aspects of your life. And on top of that, reincarnation, which may have been a sort of fate as well. My mother used to say, you know, she was convinced we had known each other in a past life and she must have treated me horribly because why else would I have come back to torment her so? And, you know, she believed in a little bit of ancestor worship because she was fearful that she had somehow offended her mother who had committed suicide when she was nine, and that when bad things happened to our family, that that might have been the cause. And my father, on the other hand, was very religious. He was, in fact, ordained as a Baptist minister. He was the sort of person who prayed before every meal, and by the time I was 12 years old, we went to church almost every day, you know, Bible study, choir practice, youth night. So that was my life until the age of 15 when my father and my older brother died, both of them of brain tumors, which then set my mother into motion, into wondering why had this happened? You know, was it God's will? Was it fate? Was it, you know, a curse on our family? Was it bad feng shui in the house? Was it ancestors who were angry? And because she asked, why did this happen, she also went looking for all the possibilities to undo it.
You read, I think, you grew up believing in ghosts?
Well, you know, I had a lot of encouragement. My mother believed from the time I was about 4 years old that I had the ability to talk to ghosts. And
why
that really
she,
was
why
my,
did she think that?
Well, it was my fault because I had told her when I was 4 years old that I couldn't go to the bathroom to brush my teeth as she had requested me to because, and I made up this lie, that there was a ghost in there. And she said, a ghost, you know. And I think a lot of traditional American mothers would have said, you know, let's go in the bathroom and let's go see and then convince the child there was nothing to be scared of in there. My mother took my hand and she took me to the bathroom and she turned on the light and she said in this wondrous voice, where are they? And she was so hopeful that we would actually see the ghost. She was always hoping she would see the ghost of her mother in particular. And I think at times she almost thought that I was her mother reincarnated because maybe I would say something or I had a food preference and she would remember that that was very much like her mother.
Well, after a while, didn't she also come to believe that the ghost of her mother inhabited your computer?
Well, inhabited my computer. And as onset to that, she believed that I could talk to my father, my brother, her mother through the Ouija board, which, if you think about it, it's sort of a very low-tech keyboard, you know, to the Nirvana Wide Web. When I wrote my stories, my very first one, The Joy Luck Club, I had something pinned to my or taped to my computer, and it was really to remind me that I should think of the forces of the muse, and it said, call your guardian angel. And my mother used to take that literally, that what I would do is summon up these ghosts who would then help me write. And she walked up to the computer one day, and she said very coyly and kind of in a very shy little girl voice, she said, hello, are you there? Do you miss me? And she thought she was talking to her mother. She believed that these stories that I was writing had come from her mother. And the proof to her was that I wrote about things I could not possibly know.
Well, and in fact, in the Joy Luck Club, one of the stories you tell turned out to be a family secret, and you hadn't known it, and yet here you revealed it. I mean, so how do you explain that?
I don't know exactly. The story that I put in the Joy Luck Club had to do with my grandmother. Now, my mother had always told me that my grandmother had been widowed when my mother was about 2 years old, and she never was supposed to marry, but eventually she did, and that was not proper, but at least she married a very rich man and became his first wife. Later on, she accidentally died while taking too much opium. She was just enjoying herself a little too much. And well, the way I changed it, you know, I just couldn't believe that a woman would accidentally die, and there just seemed to be something going on, and my mother always lamenting that she didn't have the guidance of her mother, and it was such a traumatic thing to her. And I imagined the story differently. I made her a widow, and that later she met a man, and that the man actually raped her, and that she became pregnant as a result of that rape, and she joined the household not as the first wife, but as the fourth wife. And after the baby was born, she killed herself. And that turned out to be exactly the way that it happened. And it caused my mother to say, you know, how could you know these things?
It's funny because you've had an unusual number of uncanny experiences in your life. I mean, more than many people have. And some of them have shaped you in very lasting ways. When I'm thinking about the essay in which you trace your decision to become a writer to the really traumatic death of a roommate and the things that, the unexplainable things that happened after his death.
Right. That was probably one of the most life-changing experiences. We're all shaped by people who've died. But that one was a strange one in that he had told me a fear he had, a dream he had the week before, that two men came and strangled him, and he didn't know who they were, and that it was painful, but then it was over, and he was fine, he would be fine, and if anything happened to him, could I take care of his possessions and explain things to his parents? And I said, God, you're so morbid. What, you know, I don't know what's going on. Well, he moved out. He was scheduled to move into an apartment closer to school, and we came and stayed that first night, and the next night, two men broke into his apartment, and they tied him up, and they tortured him, and he strangled to death. It was horrendous, and we didn't understand this. I also imagined the names of the people who had killed him, and Ronald and John, and that turned out to be exactly the names of the people who were later arrested and convicted. And I began to have a number of dreams that, whether or not they were just the desire for me to make sense of what had happened, they became the dreams that changed me.
You also describe conversations you had or things you felt Pete was telling you.
I did, you know, and I look back and say, well, was it wishful thinking? And yet, one of the things that he said was, I was obsessing one day, I remember, because my cat had broken her leg and that was going to be a $350 vet bill to set it. And we didn't have that kind of money. We were very poor students. And I heard Pete kind of laugh and say, you shouldn't worry about things that you have no control over. And he said, these things take care of themselves. And he said, and I can prove it. And he was about to tell me, I thought, and then suddenly the car just went bam, and I started to weave across the road. Somebody had hit me, and I was just scared out of my mind, but I was able to pull over, and a man came out, and he said, I'm so sorry. I don't know how this happened. And he said, let's see what the, are you okay? Let's see what the damage is. I couldn't find the damage except, oh, yes, you know, a little scratch underneath the bus, this old VW bus. And he said, I'll pay for this. And I said, oh, it's not worth it to even report it to insurance. They'll just raise my rates. And he said, no, I'll pay cash. Just take it to a garage, get an estimate. Just one is fine. Mail it to me. I'll mail you the cash. Well, I went to get the estimate, got off the freeway, went to the closest garage, and the estimate was the exact same cost of the vet bill. Now, how do you explain something like that?
I don't know.
And I could hear him laughing. Well, you could say, of course, this complete coincidence that I wanted to, that I look back in retrospect and imagined it was, I don't know. I can't explain it because I actually had the vet bill and I had the estimate. And yes, indeed, he did send me the money, no questions asked. I don't know how you explain those things. But this is when I feel like there are these mysteries that happen and they just make you smile and you will never understand them. But there's good in them, and I like to believe there's good in the world that we just can't explain.
To go back to your title, The Opposite of Fate, I was thinking that the opposite is chance. I mean, fate implies that there's some hidden director shaping your life, and chance suggests that it's all random, and the only direction in life comes from just how we use our own free will to respond to the randomness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that what you meant, or do you now have another idea about what the opposite of fate would be?
I think the opposite of fate is what I learned my mother had all along, which was not just to believe in fate, but its opposite, which is hope. And in hope, all things are possible. It is not to say that hope is this form of passivity where you're just sitting in a corner crying and saying, I don't know what's going to happen, but I just hope it works out. Hope is the most powerful thing there is. It's the adrenaline of the soul. You can do anything at that moment if you hope enough. You will find the cure. You will find a way to undo it. It's not that you can, you know, change everything completely, but it is such a force of your will, of your determination. And it almost, not that it doesn't matter completely what happens, but that is the opposite of fate, to try and undo that fate, to not just sit there and say, this is the way the world is.
Amy Tan is the author of the novels The Bonesetter's Daughter and The Joy Luck Club. She spoke with Anne Strainchamps about her memoir called The Opposite of Fate.